man, isn't that interesting? I'm getting a lot of notifications on Fast Blast from all of you that our stream, our internet stream, which goes along with the program, as you know, is down. It's actually down right now, completely down, according to the people. Now, I don't know if that's all the stream, part of the stream. What's going on with the internet? I have no idea, but in honor of Kevin Mitnick being here, the stream is down hard, buddy.
That's unfortunate.
Yes, it is, isn't it? I wonder if it has something to do with your appearance.
Well, I've appeared many times on your show before, and that never has happened, so it's probably unlikely.
Hmm. Maybe.
Maybe those armies of drones that are now doing a denial of service attack against Clear Channel.
Yeah, you never know. You just never know. And maybe it's being done in your honor, buddy, so thanks a lot.
Well, I hope not. I definitely would discourage any of that type of activity. That's not cool.
Uh-huh. I bet that's the exact line they wrote to you as a response that you should give to anybody like me when you got out of the federal whatever.
No.
No?
No, that's coming from the heart.
Okay. All right, so how dangerous now is all of this getting? In other words, I guess in a way I'm asking, who's winning? Are the software people and the people who put out all the protection programs winning, or are the hackers and the terrorists winning?
Well, it's like, I think it's a constant cat and mouse game that companies that are innovative security companies are trying to build better and more resilient locks, and you have a group of people out there that are trying to pick the locks.
Yeah.
And it's going to be this consistent process, you know, through the life cycle of security. It just never ends. So that's why we as consumers can't just feel confident that if we install Spy Sweeper that we're safe from spyware. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
You have to, unfortunately. What consumers want is they want the security to be transparent. They want to be able to plug in their computers to the internet, use it, and have a confidence of security. But unfortunately, when you purchase a computer, from Dell in the mail, or you go into a store and you plug it in, it's not in a default security configuration. You have to either learn about the technology, or you have to get somebody to help you. Maybe the kid, that's in, computer class down
right.
the street could help you out.
All right. Well, I think we've talked about this before, Kevin. Frankly, I know there are keystroke programs and a million things out there to monitor what you're doing. I don't really have anything on my computer that I'd be ashamed for anybody to see or worried about. However, I'm on the verge. I'm being talked into it by friends to begin doing online banking. Now, that's a horse of a different color, buddy. A big horse of a different color for me. I'm being told that online banking is every doggone bit as safe as when I walk up to my teller and I have a transaction. True.
It is. Do you want to know
false?
Why?
Yeah, I do want to know why. Yes, I want you to talk me into it.
It's true, because if there's any fraud on your account,
yes,
the bank takes the risk. They take the loss. As long as you didn't authorize the transaction, you didn't authorize it, you didn't do it yourself or authorize anybody else, and there's fraud, and somebody has hacked your password or used the what is commonly known as phishing,
yes,
to phish your login and password from you, and you find out about the illicit activity within, I think that there's a certain time period by law, maybe 30 days, 60 days, that the bank will just credit, they'll do an investigation. You'll have to probably sign a notarized document.
And you're saying this is true even if you're doing online banking?
I believe so.
All right.
Because
a good friend of mine, I thought it was hysterically funny at the time. I mean, we were on ham radio, and I was talking to this fellow in Southern California, and a Mexican person had somehow acquired his banking information. And he was doing his online banking, and it was other people's pain is funny, but I mean, he was on the air and telling us that this guy had his information or his card or whatever and was traveling south into Mexico, and he could literally go online and look at this guy spending his money. And he was going, oh, my God, he just spent $300 on so-and-so or $600 on so-and-so. He just bought a case of booze. He's having a blast. And, you know, of course, it was great pain for him as this guy traveled south spending like crazy. In the end, his bank took care of it and made good on it. And you're telling me that's always the case, whether you go to a teller or whether you use online banking. If something like that happens to you, they're going to cover it.
I believe so. I believe there's certain rules, and I don't know those rules off the top of my head, but I think it's very similar to credit card fraud. I think the law is that you could be responsible for up to $50 for fraudulent transactions, but at the end of the day, the bank, you know, rarely charges their customers any fee if there was fraud. And that's why we have such high interest rates these days, is because the banks are taking the risk. In other countries around the world, in Eastern Europe, it's a different story. It's the consumer that takes the risk. So it's even that's where it becomes a little bit scary to do online banking.
Well, as a matter of interest, Kevin, how much money do you think American financial institutions are having to pony up for fraud?
Well, the FBI just did a new survey. It was called the 2005 FBI Computer Crime Survey, and I actually was a contributor to this survey that had been done. The numbers that are that I think it was like the largest survey across a large cross section of several states, and it was in if you looked at the FBI's calculations, it's in the billions of dollars. And if anyone's interested in the survey, it's not on the FBI.gov site. I think it was up there, then it was moved. I don't know where it is, but I did put it on my website if anyone's interested, and that is www.mitnicksecurity.com, and right on the homepage there in the upper left-hand corner, anybody could pull down the recent survey that was just released, I think, a week ago.
Good plug. I assume the financial institutions don't want the public to know how much they're ponying up for fraud, right?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of times, fraud is classed under for example, with credit card fraud. If they realize they have application fraud, that's where an individual uses fraud in applying for a credit card, and the bank loses has suffered a loss. What happens is they'll put it into the bad loan category,
mm-hmm.
because they don't want to report the fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to
deduct that from their corporate tax, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of times losses are put in, you know, through creative accounting, they're put into other categories, so it doesn't negatively affect the company. You know, companies can't take a hit in the media. You know, they don't want loss in customer loyalty.
Right, and but on the other hand, Kevin, if it goes over a certain percentage, then the company itself becomes in trouble. It's not anywhere near that yet, is it? As we look across, you know, the various credit card companies and all the rest of it. I mean, are the losses getting so severe as to perhaps even put the company in trouble?
I think so. Just recently, I don't know if you heard about this, but there was a company called Checkpoint, and what they did is they sold information about people, including social security numbers and addresses, telephone numbers, basically the dossier that, you know, that they've collected through data mining and purchasing information.
Yeah.
And they sold this information to legitimate customers that had a need to know, maybe insurance, underwriters, law enforcement, and so on and so forth. So what had happened is some individuals, a fraud ring, actually applied for a Checkpoint. ChoicePoint. Checkpoint is actually a firewall company.
Right.
They applied for legitimate access to this database, and they were granted, you know, and they were obviously using some sort of false cover that they had some legitimate need for this information.
Sure.
And what they were doing was an identity theft ring.
Oh, okay. Then they socially engineered them.
Exactly. And to getting access, they actually paid for the service, but they were using the information to steal.
God.
And I just saw in a recent news release that the company was fined like $15 million. And I think that's a substantial hit, not only for and public confidence, but $15 million isn't a drop in the bucket, at least to me.
Well, I suppose in the large financial picture of the U.S., it is a drop in the bucket, but it's still a lot of money. And wow,
to an individual company, I think the loss of public confidence is much worse. And because of that incident, what had happened is it created this backlash in the private investigation community. Where there's a lot of databases out there that that people could obtain information about you, and several of these companies started masking the Social Security number. Some of them have not done that, and usually you'd have to demonstrate a real need to know that you're a real business, and they would send somebody out to your place of business to verify you are real, and then they would allow you to have access to the information. But you have to think about it. A Nigerian fraud ring could simply open up a corporation, rent an office space,
yes,
put in furniture, put in computers, and they look and feel like a real legitimate business.
Uh-huh. And but they've got to learn to write better scripts. they really do. I mean, they're pathetic. I actually, somewhere here I've got the recording of one. I actually called this guy in Africa. And I went through the whole thing with him, and I finally got him so exasperated. You know, I should look up that audio. I've got it here somewhere. It was an absolute riot. Have you ever done that? Have you ever called one of them?
No, I never spent my time.
I just did it for a hobby, just to see, what would happen. And, I got a million...
You should play that audio one day. I'd love to hear it. not recently. I think within the last couple of years, there was this woman that worked for a New York law firm, and she received the Nigerian email offering, to deposit, $30 million to her account, and she'd be able to keep like 90% of it.
Oh yeah.
Right, and she had actually thought she had won the lottery, so she was she communicated with the people wherever they were in the world, and they needed in advance a fee to handle certain taxes and transferring and lawyers, and they needed $2 million, so. The lady thought, well, if I can, retire with $20 million, at least $20 million, all I have to do is, I'm a signer for the checks at the law firm I'm working, so maybe I just send them the $2 million, wait for the deposit, I could pay the law firm back the $2 million, and I could live happily ever after.
Well, there's nobody easier to scam than a scammer. And I was trying to figure out how to do that. Anyway, I got this guy real frustrated. Now, doggone it, I can't find it. I will find it, and I will play it. It was actually, on reflection, kind of a riot. The poor fellow just, I just kept talking about, when could I get the money, and God, I really need a new car. And he was just, Bell, you be patient. Patient, guaranteed to work. It was just a riot, and I do have it, and there's really no reason I couldn't play it. Sometime do that if you want to have some fun, Kevin. Call one of those numbers in Africa, and have some fun with them. It makes you feel better. I mean, I get so many of them in my public account that I finally just got frustrated and wanted to strike back.
Hey, about a year ago, last February, I was in Amsterdam, and I went to an internet cafe. And there was this group of Nigerians, huddled around this PC.
Really?
And it really looked like they were doing some sort of fraud, but I kind of, stayed out of their way. I didn't want to be noticed, by these people, and then, they come after me or something.
Oh,
so
I should think you wouldn't want to be noticed by anybody near a bunch of Nigerians around a computer.
There you go.
By the way, how has life been for you since your encounter with our government?
Well, it's been new and improved. I started a security company, defensive thinking that you mentioned in the initial broadcast.
Yes.
And then I changed the name to Mitnick Security because I thought it would be better to have my name in it. And what I actually do is 75% of my time is I go around the world and I do public speaking engagements, and I speak at a number of conferences and a number of companies talking about security, the human factor of security when it comes to social engineering, wireless security, and a number of different topics.
So it's Mitnick, the name.
Yeah, my last name, Mitnick, with a CK, right? Yeah. I figured it's good for the brand, right? So, so I go around the world. I'm going to Israel in mid-February to speak in, I think, Tel Aviv, and then I come back and I go to Utah to a university. Then I go to South Africa, which is going to be.
Have you ever been to Israel?
No.
No. You'll notice that it's a country of very young people, many of whom carry submachine guns.
Yeah, and you know that there's a lot of technically astute people out there because
yes, indeed.
It's like the real Silicon Valley of the world.
Actually, a lot of interesting security type software comes out of Israel. For example, I had a gentleman from Israel who wrote a program that could simply analyze your voice and render up an opinion about whether you were telling the truth or a lie, just based on your voice.
Voice stress analysis.
Yes. The Israelis use it at checkpoints and so forth. And
maybe the Mossad has like a pocket version.
Oh, it's very effective. Very effective. How are we doing in that world, by the way, of voice recognition and face recognition? I remember I went to the Super Bowl, told you, and they took a picture. That was the first one where they took everybody's picture and looked in files to see if you were a bad guy.
I think it's getting better. I think that about a year ago the technology was in its infancy, and I think as time moves on that a lot of these companies are developing better biometric technologies. But the problem is there's not much early adopters. Maybe in very secure facilities, they're using biometrics, but I really don't see that as a huge trend. You have to think about, because of all the online fraud, that you would think a lot of the banks and financial institutions wouldn't necessarily use biometrics, but they'd use what we call two-form factor authentication, which actually means it means that you have a piece of information, something that and you might have a device like a smart card. And with the combination of having the card that you swipe through like a card reader and having like a PIN code that that raises a level of confidence that you are who you say you are. But the problem is the fraud losses that are actually the losses that are actually reported as fraud, those numbers aren't high enough to justify putting in stronger authentication systems.
Hmm.
Because it's too costly to roll out. But there are other innovative companies that are trying to build in two-factor authentication. Like, for example, there's a company that if you log onto your bank account, it might present an image of an airplane. And you know that if you visit your bank and you don't see an image of your airplane, the airplane before you log in,
yes,
that it's likely to be not really the bank site, but a bogus site that somebody's trying to deceive you into logging in as and to steal your username, to steal your password.
Mm-hmm. I must say it was done to me once. James E. Hansen, longtime director of the agency's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, said in an interview that officials at NASA headquarters had ordered the public affairs staff to review his coming lecture papers, any postings on the Goddard website, and requests for interviews from journalists. In my world, that's a wow. Kevin Mitnick, back in a moment. Okay, for the sake of my audience, I think I want to get practical with Kevin for a moment here. And Kevin, what I mean by that is there are a million different things offering to remove spyware from your computer, offering to remove viruses, offering to prevent viruses. What I'd like to know is what's really good? What's the best advice you can give an individual, either with respect to a program to have or what to do, firewalls? I don't know. What's really good out there?
Well, first of all, personal firewall. Microsoft XP after Service Pack 2, Windows had a built-in firewall in Service Pack 1, but with Service Pack 2, Microsoft, when it releases, when you install the OS, it turns it on by default. And what that does is it blocks malicious incoming connections. So anybody trying to connect to your computer from the outside. However, it doesn't stop malicious programs from connecting out. So a more resilient firewall, actually the one that I use myself when I'm using Windows, is one called Zone Alarm.
Zone Alarm, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a real popular firewall, and you can actually download it for free. I actually bought the pro version, so I'd have a little bit, I could tweak it to my needs.
My question would be, and you tweaked it, and you know how to do that, but if you just get it as is, which most of us would do.
It's certainly better than nothing.
It's better than nothing. My question would be, like a radar detector in a car, how often does it false? In other words, tell you that there's a apparent attempted access when really there is not?
Well, the problem is if you're connected to the Internet, you're constantly being probed by malicious programs.
Yeah.
The terminology in the computer's, I guess, security field or hacking underground is called port scanning.
Right.
Where a port is like a door. You know, you're going down the street and you're knocking on every door to see if there's a computer application behind it.
Looking for an open door.
Right, but a port really just lets you talk to a computer program, and if a hacker could find programs that he or she can talk to remotely, he or she might be able to find the vulnerability. Okay, so what Zone Alarm does, what I think Microsoft's default installation of the firewall does, is it basically just closes all the ports. So nothing is open unless you explicitly open it.
Okay, so what's in there from Microsoft, from Service Pack 2 on, is, you're saying, very helpful?
Yeah, of course, because what it's by default, it's actually turned on, which they should have done, years ago, was when they, that the firewall should have been turned on by default. But what happens is then sometimes it breaks things, and then customers end up calling their support number, and it takes, their time. But a more resilient firewall, which I mentioned before, Zone Alarm, what happens if, let's say you visit a malicious website, and that website exploits a flaw within Internet Explorer, and the hacker is able to download a malicious program to your computer. And what happens is that malicious program secretly logs all your keystrokes. So every time you write an email, it stores the information, all your keystrokes. Every time you sign on to your online bank, every time you, use AOL Instant Messenger, and then it, secretly sends it off to the bad guy, to an email account in Russia, or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, what would happen is the more resilient firewalls will pop up a dialog box where that program is going to ask for permission to connect out. And unfortunately, some users might just say yes and let it go out, not knowing what it is, just thinking, well, it has some really complicated name, so maybe it's part of, an important program with Windows, so I'm going to allow it to connect out.
Kevin, you keep mentioning Internet Explorer. So I want a frank, honest answer from you. Because IE is, Microsoft's product, is it better? Would you advise people to use another browser? I don't know. Netscape, or there's a lot of them out there.
Firefox, there's Opera. I'd recommend Firefox. I'd recommend any browser besides Internet Explorer, actually.
Okay,
yeah,
well, that's honest.
Yeah, there's been a lot of flaws identified with Internet Explorer, and it's not to say that other browsers don't have as much
flaws. They're just not going after them as hard because Microsoft is the million-pound gorilla. And
exactly. They have the biggest market share, so you find a flaw in a Microsoft program, then it's going to affect many more people.
Got it. So that's what everybody goes after. That's no real slam on Microsoft. In fact, they're going after them precisely because they are so successful, and you've got more numbers, more people using IE, so certainly.
Exactly. Now, with spyware, what I recommend is actually, there's not one spyware scanner that I would say is like the killer app, so to speak, that will detect any piece of spyware.
I like AVG. I use that.
Okay.
And it's free.
AVG is free. There's one that I actually used in the past called SpyCop, which I really liked. I think Webroot has like spyware scanner. I think Microsoft has a free one. I don't recall the name off the top of my head.
Well, I'm pretty careful, Kevin. Honestly, I am. I'm very mindful. I don't open, attachments I don't know about. I'm careful with the websites I visit, but still, I must admit to you, Kevin, the last time I ran SpyBot, which I think is pretty good, I had like 100 and something in, pieces of spyware in there. 100 and something.
Yeah.
It made me sick.
Yep. Yeah, because a lot of the companies, that legitimate companies, install programs to kind of track where you're going on the internet.
Well,
remember,
sure.
The old double click?
Well, sure.
The double click cookie. Well, they do it to advertise things that you will be interested in, so you'll buy the product or service.
Yes.
But how these spyware scanners work is, similarly with the AV scanners, is most of it's signature-based. So a malicious spyware tool would have already had it been detected and analyzed by a lab. The lab would have had to create a signature, and then they would have had to put it in their database, and then when their customers update their database of signatures,
right,
it identifies whatever they labeled that piece of...
Well, I notice nearly every time I log on, there's always an update to get. So this must really be a big business on both sides.
Oh, it's huge. I literally about 6 months ago, I went to aerosmith.com, and I just went there to look at their tour schedule. And I don't know, like 15 minutes later, I get this pop-up dialog box saying, your computer is infected with spyware. If you, if you want to get this fixed, please click here. And I'm going, that's interesting. So I started, taking a look around my system.
Yes.
And realized when I went to the aerosmith.com website, it exploited a vulnerability in the browser and downloaded a piece of spyware that they were using to sell me products. And then what I was kind of angry because what it did is it renamed certain things in the Windows operating system, like Notepad and WordPad, those files to infected those files, so I could never get rid of this pop-up dialog box. So I actually had to reinstall the operating system from scratch.
Oh, my God.
Which, took a whole day because I have so many applications and custom things that I, wasted a whole day of my time.
Gee, one whole day, Kevin. When I have to do it, it's like 2 or 3 days and out of my life, just gone. And you do it in one day.
Well, my day is probably longer than yours. I'll spend 16 hours in front of the computer to do it.
I see. Yeah, I tend to do the same thing, just go and go and go and keep going. I mean, but it's so sad have to do.
Well, think about what Sony did with the digital rights management software that they were secretly embedding in your computer to control access to music and to video.
Wow.
The technology that we call in the field is called rootkit technology, is where the operating system is modified in such a way that you could hide files, you could hide processes.
All right. Now let's talk about this for a second.
Okay.
Whether it's music or movies, I kind of side with the artists and the producers and the motion picture companies on this. My God, it's going to ruin. I really think it has the potential to ruin the record industry, to ruin the motion picture industry. The minute a movie gets out, it's available on the net for download. Millions of people are downloading, probably millions, downloading both music and movies. Before they even get into the theater, it's a ripoff of these artists and these companies, and it's not right. It's stealing.
No, I understand your position, but what I'm talking about here is you have a company, a third-party company, that's planting software,
yes,
secretly within your computer, that if an attacker understands how that software works, they could use it as a conduit to do evil things to you.
I see. So, they, in other words, in an effort to protect, they're opening a door.
Exactly. Exactly. And I take issue with any company that if I install, if I put their CD in my system and install some sort of product, that it secretly embeds some sort of management software without my permission or consent, especially if it's really buried where I can't really see what's there.
Hey, Kevin, do we need laws about this? Or do we have laws about this? Maybe we do and I don't know it. In other words, if you produce a piece of software, and whoever you are, and you put something in it for some commercial reason for your company, a reasonable thing, I guess, to do, there's no real law against that, right?
Well, usually I think these companies are able to cover themselves and have very limited liability because in their long license agreements that you click yes to, that
yes.
Nobody reads,
yes.
They probably have it right in there what they're doing.
You know, you're right. I've never actually taken the time to read one of those. I always click, yeah, sure, I accept the terms and the conditions.
Yeah, I never read one of them myself.
Does it say down, you think, down near the bottom, and oh, by the way.
Yeah, by the way, we're watching everything you do on your computer and every internet site you visit, every keystroke you type, we're monitoring and capturing and using for our own purposes. Thank you very much. And you would never know about it.
Yeah, you'd just say, okay.
Exactly. And that's why it's so concerning with what I was... Have you ever used a... Well, let me back up. Have you ever went to an internet hotspot and used wireless?
I have, yes.
Now, there's... I've been doing a lot of research on... wireless hacking techniques because I'm preparing a talk for when I go to South Africa.
Mm.
And I found a very interesting tool that was developed by some really good security researchers. And what this tool allows you to do that's freely available to anyone on the internet is you can go into any type of hotspot or anywhere for that matter, and you run this tool. And basically what it does is it there's a modification that's made to the drivers that drive the wireless card, and what it does.
Oh my God! I see it coming.
What happens is you as a user are you get ready to associate you want to connect to like T-Mobile at Starbucks. What happens if you have an attacker in RF range, radio frequency range? What the attacker's computer could be set up to do. Is when you're sending a probe
yep.
looking for that particular access point, this computer sends back, yeah, I'm it, and then hands and then hands you an IP address.
Yeah, I've got the picture. This is horrible.
Right, and then
horrible.
And then you could imagine.
Oh yeah.
All the potential ability to exploit client side vulnerability.
Oh geez, Kevin. How much of that is going on now?
Oh, I'm sure it's happening all the time. I mean, think about airport lounges at airports.
Oh, on and on and on and on, yes.
Right. You know, think about the...
In other words, instead of capturing Starbucks, there's a guy with a computer sitting a few feet away from you, and you're capturing what he's putting out. He's saying, here I am. I'm a wireless point. I'm available. And
yeah, you're basically a rogue access point.
Got it.
And you're man in the middle. So what you're doing saying, oh, I'm T-Mobile, connect to me. You're handing that user an IP address, which is now connected to your computer.
Yikes.
Right? So anything the victim does goes through your system. So you can control what the victim sees, or you could be man in the middle, right?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Pretty scary stuff.
And you're saying this is pretty common knowledge among those who do this kind of thing out there and that there are many of them?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of people that go and buy wireless, the convenience of buying a wireless router, go to Fry's, they go buy when they install it.
Oh, yeah.
They might think, oh, I have to be secure, so I'm going to turn on, wired equivalency privacy or what they call WEP.
Well, let me tell you, WEP, right. Let me tell you, a friend of mine in Las Vegas, Kevin, where there's a very high density of hotspots, has simply put a Yagi antenna with a rotator on his roof. And believe me when I tell you, Kevin, he doesn't pay for internet ever. He just rotates that beam around and can get just like any number of wireless points as it rotates. And he's just using other OPN, other people's net.
Open wireless networks. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I mean, in cities, I was recently in Washington, D.C., and it's like anywhere in this like five square blocks, they had like public wireless internet. So basically what they're doing is they're making internet available wirelessly to anybody in the area. But but even with WEP, with their software out there, because of the weaknesses of that protocol, anybody with a laptop and the right software,
right.
It just takes 20 minutes to crack the key.
Oh, my
gracious. 5 to 20
gracious.
Minutes.
So all these wireless hotspots are sort of a magnet for modern computer pickpockets. Only now it's easier, and the pickpocket doesn't have to actually put his hand anywhere near the guy's pocket, so to speak.
Right, and you have to think about, like, a lot of businesses. I was recently at my doctor's office, and I turned on my computer, and Windows has this thing called the wireless zero configuration utility. So what happens is if it sees a wireless access point and your card is, you know, and it's scanning and finds one, pops up and says, oh, I found a wireless network. Do you want to connect?